following is an interview with J.R. Montgomery Jr. by Flagey Nally for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The name of our project is Prohibition in Nelson County, Its Causes and Effects, the period between 1920 and 1933. This interview is conducted in Springfield, Kentucky, Washington County, on Main Street at Sims and Montgomery Insurance and Real Estate Agency on April the 26th, 1989. Mr. Montgomery, would you give me first your date of birth?
My date of birth is April the 18th, 1909.
And your place of birth?
Place of birth, Washington County, Kentucky.
Your parents' names?
My parents' names were James R. Montgomery and Mary Elizabeth Montgomery, Mary Elizabeth O'Daniel Montgomery.
Your educational background from high school?
From high school, graduated from Springfield, Washington County High School in 1928. Went to University of Dayton, Ohio for the years of 28, 29, 29, and 30. Left there in 30 and went to the University of Kentucky at 30, 31, and 31, 32, and graduated in 1932.
Then can you tell me, when did you marry, and the name of your spouse, please?
I married on October the 5th, 1933, to Sarah Wathen Rubel of Lebanon, Kentucky.
And you have five children, I understand.
Five children we have.
Can you give me their names, please?
The oldest one is Flagey Montgomery Nally, living in Bardstown, Kentucky. Second is Sally Wathen Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E, living in Harrisburg, Kentucky. The third is James Richard III, living in New York City, New York. The fourth is Helf Rubel Montgomery, living in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The fifth is Thomas Alexander, living in Carrollton, Georgia, near Atlanta.
That's a pretty good review of your background. Thank you so much for that.
Yes, sir.
Well, when Prohibition began in 1920, you were 11 years old.
That's right.
And so you were a preteen.
That's right.
What memories do you have as an 11-year-old about Prohibition and the effects it had on your life?
Well, my memory was that there was no legal whiskey at the time, and the only type of alcohol or intoxicating drink was what was made, what could be called the black market, by moonshiners and bootleggers. And I remember that from age 11 on up.
You heard conversation about it in your household?
Oh, yes. It was conversation in the house as well as on the street and the public.
So it affected everybody, even young people. Well, how was your father in business? How did it affect him?
Well, my father was not a drinker. However, he did like his little toddy, as they called it at that time. And I think that he would keep some moonshine in a small quantity on hand where when he wanted a drink or if he had company, he could offer him a little toddy or a little alcoholic drink of some nature.
Well, where did he obtain this moonshine? Do you have any recollection of how that was?
Being 11 years old, I didn't ask him where he got it. I have very little idea, but I think it came mostly from down around the Manton section.
Of Washington County?
Of Washington County.
So tell me about the climate in Washington County. Was it wet at the time of Prohibition? Were there distilleries in Washington County?
There had been distilleries, according to reports, in Washington County. But that was many years before I was born.
So actually, the big production of whiskey and bourbon came from Nelson County, the adjoining county.
Nelson and Marion.
So when you went to buy your legal whiskey, the people would have to go to Nelson County to get it?
Well, we usually bought it at places like drugstore or then dispensaries.
Is this during Prohibition you're speaking of? You would get it as medicinal?
No, this was after Prohibition.
After Prohibition?
After Prohibition. If we wanted to get it, any kind of alcoholic drink, we had to buy it from a bootlegger or a moonshiner.
And there were plenty of those on hand?
Oh, yes.
Were they spread all throughout this county as well as Nelson County and everywhere? Did everybody know where these people were?
Everybody didn't know, but those that wanted some knew where they were and were much trouble to get, if any trouble.
Well, can you tell me some of the people that were in this illegal operation in Washington County? Do you remember them?
Yes. I remember Mr. Charlie Keene, who lived only about 2.5 miles west of Springfield on the Bargetown Road. I remember Mr. Arthur Watson, who lived at Frederickstown or near Manton. I remember him quite distinctly and bought several pints from him. And several more such as that. Mr. Alex Thompson, who lived where Everett Mudd did live.
In Fredericksburg?
Near between Fredericksburg and Springfield. And a number more that I can't recall.
Well, did you feel like you could trust these people to make good whiskey?
Well, none of it was good.
But it wouldn't kill you.
It was sugar whiskey. It was made sugar, maybe on top of a stove, or maybe they had a still. But it was made out of just sugar and colored with burnt peaches or some substitute as that.
What type of proof would it be?
Well, it varied. The proof probably would be anywhere from 90 to 110. Yes, I'm sure it wasn't tested for proof.
How was the quality?
Well, it would burn your stomach. It would burn your mouth, but it would give you a sensation.
Well, what would you pay for this pint? Would you buy by the pint generally, or would it be dispensed as fifths?
No. It was never anything but pints.
And what would you pay for that pint?
Possibly $2. Something around $2. Mm-hmm. But $2 then was a good deal of money.
Yes. Well, what feeling did you have about these people that dispensed this illegal whiskey? Did you look down on them, or did you have a feeling that they were doing a service? What was the attitude of people toward moonshiners?
This was in the Depression time, and most of them were good, law-abiding citizens. They were just trying to take care of large families that had no other means of income. They just couldn't make it from the farms. They couldn't make it. They had no employment. This was Depression days back in before Hoover time. And nobody criticized them that we heard as being criminals or doing any kind of work of injustice or should be handled by the law.
So they were law-abiding citizens as far as everyone was concerned.
That's right. And good citizens would pay
church-going people.
Church-going, pay their bills, wouldn't steal a dime, just trying to exist.
Well, do you remember any intervention by the federal agents with people that
Oh, yes. We had the Prohibition agents that we could see around Springfield. That would come in ever so often. And then, too, I think that we had one or two that was living here as Prohibition agents. and they would make a raid every now and then. We'd hear about that. And it was, might cause a little excitement. One day we found that there was a still that had been removed from the place of operation and brought up to the courthouse or the jail, and was chained to the jail and locked. And the next morning it was gone. Who, the owner, came and got it, cut the chain, and removed the steel back to wherever it is, from wherever it came.
And nobody tried to interfere with this? No, well, law enforcement?
If they did, it was soon forgotten. But that happened.
Well, do you have any recollection of anything as lawless as guns and people being killed or any of that happening here?
No.
That happened all over the United States, but it wasn't that ferocious
that
here.
That wasn't here. This was just local, making sugar whiskey. Some of it was transported, I understand, to Lexington and Louisville and the larger centers by just hiding it in the cars or just some ways smuggling it to the point that they moved it around. Sometimes, so I hear, that it was sold in kegs, little kegs of 15 or 20 gallons.
So it was sent from Washington County out
to
bigger markets.
Yes. It wasn't sent to, it was sent to people, more than people. I remember my cousin, Alec Blanford, was a big operator at the Bourbon Stockyard.
That's Louisville, Kentucky.
That's in Louisville. And I was riding back to Louisville with him to spent a few days with some of my relatives. And he said, first I've got to go by a friend of mine down here near Fairfield. So I said, well, that'd be fine. So we stopped at the house, and then the owner of the house said, well, come and go with me. So we went out to his barn. He was driving a kind of a car with a trunk or rumble seat, I believe it was a rumble seat. So we drove out there and drove into the barn, and the man got up into the loft, uncovered a small keg of whiskey, and rolled it over, and they put it into the car, and we went into Louisville.
So you were carrying?
Yes. Yes, we were.
Do you recall this Fairfield gentleman's name?
No, I don't. I didn't know him.
He was just the connection of Cousin Alexander's.
Well, he was a maker.
Blanford.
He was a maker. They made it, and my cousin Alec Blanford knew of him and probably sold livestock for him. And he was had a very good name of making good whiskey.
Well, do you know where it went after you took it to Louisville? Do you have any, was there any conversation
Fairfield and Louisville? It went to Alec Blanford's home, and he just used it as personal. He wasn't selling. There was never any organized deal of making and having a dealer and then selling it. It was made, and the person that wanted it just got it from the moonshiner and the bootlegger.
So it's just personal use.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, do you recall during Prohibition, you know, when the medicinal whiskey came into being and the government gave permission for the doctors to dispense it?
It occurred all through Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
From my knowledge, I recall even at 11 years old or 1920, that if a doctor felt that you needed some whiskey for medical reasons, that he could write a prescription and it would be taken to the drugstore and they got it.
Do you remember the cost of paying for the drugstore and the doctor?
It wasn't too expensive.
It wasn't. Well, was there a lot of fake medical problems because
of that,
you think?
It was some, to my knowledge, just being a kid, a young person. I couldn't say just how much it was, but it was done to a certain extent that particularly the doctors themselves, if they wanted a drink of good whiskey, they could use it for them. They used it. But not to an excess that we ever heard of.
Well, do you recall what medicines there were on the market at that time? Was it important to have whiskey available since medicine was not probably very much at that point developed? Do you remember the medicines that were available?
Well, I wouldn't say what it was good for or not good for, mm-hmm. but it was a kind of a, I guess you would call it a sedative, not a sedative, but a
stimulant,
mm-hmm. Or something that would ease your pain and so forth.
Well, I know today we have so much medicine on the market, it's hard to realize that
yes.
at that time it was so
tranquilizer.
Little.
Tranquilizer. It was kind of a tranquilizer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, can you tell me any of your recollection about what was going on in Nelson County? I know as the 20s developed, you became a businessman in the late 20s, early 30s,
mm-hmm.
and you did business in Nelson County.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew the distillers personally, probably.
Yes.
Can you give me a background on whom you knew, and business that you would have conducted with some of the distillers?
Yes, I was acquainted with the Beams. I knew Mr. Jim Beam, who was the owner, or the family was the owner of the Jim Beam Distillery. I knew the Samuels, that was the Mr. Leslie Samuels, who was the owner of the Samuels out to Sandals, Kentucky. The Heaven Hill Distillery was a new organization that started at an old site that had been to the distillery and a lot of prominent people, including Shapiro's and Mr. Mathis and Sam Mallon, Alec Blanford, and a group went together and formed the Heaven Hill Distillery, and also Mr. Nolan, Dick Nolan from Lebanon, Kentucky, was the real instigator of the Heaven Hill Distillery.
Okay.
He was the one that interested the Shabaris in opening the Heaven Hill.
I think that was after this period. That was probably in the 40s.
No. This is just at the end of, this is just before Prohibition. This is when it was going to be known that Prohibition was going to be disposed of and that legal whiskey will again be made. This was in probably the 1932-33.
Well, most people don't know that Heaven Hill was formed at that time. They think it was formed in the early 40s.
Well, it took a while. It took a while to go, and then of course you don't make whiskey and sell it the next day. You had to age it, and that did take time. And did the same thing happened to a distillery that's no longer in existence. It was started by Mr. Lewis Guthrie and Ellie Blank from Sand Valley, and called the Pride of Nelson. Yeah, and the building still remains, but it's no longer in existence.
And that started at about the same time when the repeal began, they began the bleeding.
Slightly afterwards,
mm-hmm.
slightly after Prohibition had been done away with and legal whiskey was again legal.
Mm-hmm. Well, being a young insurance man, were you eager to insure these distilleries as they began operation again, or?
Absolutely.
Good, and
absolutely.
So.
And did.
So you crossed over the line and went over and worked in Nelson County with these people.
Because a lot, the reason that I did, a lot of people that I was either related to by birth or were people from Springfield, Kentucky, that put money up, and I knew them personally.
This was Mr. Sam Nally?
Mr. Sam Nally, and of course, Taylor.
Dick Nolan?
Mr. Dick Nolan. And the Shabaros, they were all Springfield people then. They didn't even live in Marshtown.
Well, tell us about your connection with Mr. Beam. How was he to deal with, and what condition was he in as prohibition lifted?
Well, Mr. Jim Beam was an elderly man, and I knew his son, Jerry Beam, better than I knew him. And of course he had to rebuild the old distillery as it had run down, been vacant for years, been used for other purposes. And it took quite a while and quite a lot of money to bring it back into a condition that it could be operated.
That's at Claremont, Kentucky.
And the same with the Samuels. I knew Mr. Leslie Samuels faintly, but I did know his son, T.W. Samuels.
Bill Sr.
Bill Sr. And became a very personal friend and wrote a great deal of business for them. And then later, when he sold out, I followed with him through with the Maker's Mark that he bought from
Burke Springs, it was called.
Burke Springs, the Burks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Burks.
That was in the early 50s.
That was somewhat like that, after the war. Yeah.
Well, all of these men have been extremely prosperous since that time.
Mm-hmm.
They have all done, the Samuels particularly, and Mr. Beam's operation still is one of the biggest in the world.
Yep.
The thing that was so marvelous about Mr. Beam, I understand, was that he was, as you say, an older person, but when he established his second distillery, it became more prosperous than his first had ever, and he made more money in between the time in his late 60s to his late 70s. Than he did in the preceding years when he was a younger person.
There was a lot more money to be made, and whiskey actually came back than it was beforehand. There were many, many problems in legal whiskey after Prohibition, and that was the amount of taxation that was imposed upon legal whiskey. And many of the distilleries were suffering greatly because that when whiskey came a certain age, the tax had to be paid. And if it weren't sold, if it hadn't been disposed of, the tax still had to be paid. And a lot of these distillery people just didn't have the cash and the available money to pay this huge tax.
Do you remember any of those in particular?
Yes. All of them. All of them. I remember that was the Beams. I remember the Samuels. Certainly was with Maker's Mark. Everyone. All of them. Because it was a tremendous amount of money. Because $10 a gallon or something of that sort. And if they had thousands and thousands of gallons in the warehouses aging, and it reached this age where tax had to be paid, that called for lots and lots of money.
Well, there were some that were more astute businessmen than others and managed to come through this.
Sure. Well, and it also caused a lot of them selling out to the bigger companies like Seagram's and Heimborger and National Distillery.
American Brands.
Yeah.
Let's see. Do you remember in your 20s, was there any repercussion from the churches? Were there preachings from the pulpits? Were there statements from the Vatican? Was there anything that came into this that tried to regulate the moral feeling?
I, in my own judgment, I do not feel that the Catholic Church really felt that there was any moral obligation in making illegal whiskey, for the simple reason that most of them were good, devout Christians that took care of a large family, and it was a matter of survival that they did that. And from character witnesses and things, many priests would testify that he was he did make moonshine, which was illegal at the time according to law, but he was high caliber, honest, upright, and was just trying to put bread on the table for his family.
So the priest would vouch for these families.
They have, and I've seen it and heard it done.
How's that now? Where would you see it and hear that done?
I heard it done some family in near Marion County on Nelson County was brought before the federal jury in Louisville, and the local priest was called as a character witness, and he is told that he was a good moral man, honest man, religious man, and everything. The only thing was that the only reason that he was breaking the law was that he just didn't have any other means during the Depression to take care of his family.
And that would be in a court system that this would be done?
This was in a court.
Yeah, on behalf of the people.
Yeah. He probably was guilty. He was guilty of making illegal whiskey, but it would be a character witness that, mm-hmm. that would tell him that he was high class, honest, poor, gentleman with usually a large family.
Yeah. So the church really stood beside people that they thought were worthy.
They didn't. They didn't say he should do it or yeah. should not do it, but they said that he was not a criminal type of person.
Well, do you remember big jail sentences and people being taken to prison? Any of that?
Well, they weren't big jail sentences. They may be 30 days in jail. Or something of that sort, but it wasn't organized crime in any sense. It was just breaking the law by making whiskey that was not legal at the time.
So there was no big black market here at all?
No. There's no black market. And I recall one instance going to Lexington, and there was a car that had been pulled over and stopped, and two or three automobiles. And what had happened was this person was taking moonshine, white sugar whiskey, to Lexington in an old car. Well, it was a Star, I remember. And the prohibition officers were, they had it in half gallon jars, and they had it all tucked in the back of the car and covered up so it shouldn't be seen. But anyhow, they stopped him and they found it. So they were taking it and they're throwing it against the post along the fence line and breaking it, and it was running that down in the ditch, you know.
Were there people down on their knees trying to get it up?
Oh, no.
Do you remember feeling that this was a movement conducted by the Irate Women of the United States, the WCTU? Did you have any feeling of women being instrumental in having pushed this?
You mean for prohibition?
Yes.
Well, really and truly, I was a little young at that time, and I'm sure that before prohibition, it used to be that they had the open saloons, and they would just could go in and take a drink of whiskey at the bar, and didn't.
We were talking about the women as opposed to the to the legalization of whiskey again and their part in it.
Back in those days, you never saw a woman drink. You just they just didn't use alcoholic drink. So it was just the men, and usually they would just do it on occasions that. Like County Court Day, or something when they had to go to town. I never forget one story I heard that this fellow said, well, says, this is County Court Day, and I just have to go to Springfield. And he says, every time I go to Springfield on County Court Day, I can't help but going to the dispensary and getting too much. And it just kills me to think that that's what I've got to do today.
And he did it.
And he did it. That's true.
Oh. Well, tell us about the saloons in Springfield. Very few of us at my age are familiar with where they were or how many there were.
There were about three or four. It would just be like any other store. I think they had one under the hotel.
Walton Hotel?
Oh, Walton Hotel, yeah, they had one down there. I think it was one over here where Skeets Kelly has a drugstore, one there. And then one right on Lebanon Road, the lady that sells antiques.
Shoemakers.
Okay.
So people would go in and have a drink and probably have something to eat. Is this right?
Oh, no.
No feeding?
No, they didn't feed. They had a kind of a bar set up. Might be some cheese there. You could cut a piece of, set up a piece of cheese, or they had these pickled eggs.
Or pickled pig's feet?
Yeah, pickled pig feet and things of that nature, but no dinner.
No restaurant,
no
but
rest.
They did serve it, sandwiches.
It wasn't, whiskey at that time was not served like it is at the present time where you have a drink before eating and then eating. It was just the men, women. You never saw a woman go into a bar, into a saloon, not a bar. They called them saloons in those days. You never saw that.
Well, when you went in, did you just stand at the bar or was there seating?
Well, they had stools. And then they had chairs sitting around. It wasn't a table. They didn't have tables and things that sort. But they just had, it was a gathering place.
It's a social.
It's kind of a social place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know there were many, many in Bardstown mm-hmm. at one point. Mm-hmm. And then during the Prohibition time, I think there were many those same spots, but just in a little different fashion.
Yes.
You could go to those same places and get the illegal drink.
A lot of them were able to get whiskey from the drugstores through influence with their doctors. And that was good, legal, old whiskey made before Prohibition.
So this was the medicinal?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. This was supposed to be the medicinal.
That came out of the warehouse after being aged and properly
cared for.
That's
right.
Well, do you remember the city and county officials that were on hand at that time and how they kept law and order, or if they just sort of looked over most of it? And
most of them played. Most of the Prohibition agents that I knew were on the payoff deal. And I can recall around Manton and down in that section of the county of Nelson and Marion and Washington, where it seems like, and over and around New Haven and places of that sort, there's many, many moonshine spots. And you could tell by the smoke coming out of their little operation, stills, you know. And they usually had one person, kind of notify them, hide your equipment, so-and-so is in town, and he's coming out here to make a raid. So he would have the money, and he would pay off the prohibition agent. And there was a lot of graft, because nobody, really, very few, wanted prohibition. They found out it didn't work. It didn't get rid of whiskey. And it wasn't the answer to the deal whatsoever. It didn't take long to prove that you're just not going to deny people using alcohol when they want it. Speakeasies.
Tell us about those.
Speakeasies were the things in larger cities like Louisville, Chicago, Cincinnati, and so forth. And people would learn where they were. And they would have illegal whiskey, illegal beer, homebrew, as they called it. And it'd sneak in the back door. And they did have chairs. And
did you have to have a password or know somebody or have a little identification or any of that, or did you just find out where they were and go?
Well, no, they were pretty well secured, and they'd have locked doors, and you'd have to be able to identify yourself and so forth before you could get in.
Did you have guards and that type of thing? Did you feel?
They did. They had guards.
And I guess they were raided from time to time.
Oh yeah, many times.
So you never knew if you were in there when they were raided. Were you taken to jail?
No, I was in one in Cincinnati that was raided. And we were just drinking some homebrew, I think. And the police came and raided the place. But they just asked the people if they would be so kind to leave. And then they arrested the operators.
So you didn't even have to go testify or
say. No. We weren't doing anything.
I know.
Yeah.
What about the economic activity here? Did you feel the real slowdown of monies and all affected with distilling operations being closed? Did that just make a marked difference, or was it so close to the depression that you couldn't separate the two?
You couldn't separate, but we had a feeling, all particularly the farmers that raised the grain and things that was used by the distilleries in making whiskey, that market had closed. It helped cause the depression and tough times after World War I. And it added to the depression, without a doubt. And the worst part about it, it didn't do away with the use of alcohol. And people were drinking this stuff that they didn't know what it was and didn't care. And they were getting Jake leg and various results of physical disability that came from illegal whiskey.
You knew of people then that were afflicted?
Yes, yes.
And couldn't get better?
No.
That was a permanent thing?
It was a permanent thing.
What is a Jake leg?
It's a kind of you're paralyzed. Your feet, you're unable to use your feet, and so And it's very painful. We knew a number of people that had jake leg, as they called it, because of getting some bad whiskey. It was all illegal.
About blindness, I've always heard people went blind. Did you ever hear cases of that?
Yes, heard cases of that. I didn't know of any case of that, but I heard of them.
So there were terrible side effects.
Terrible side effects.
Mm-hmm. Once this was discovered, where this bad whiskey had come from, would you shut those people down? You know, if you had known that a jake leg came from a certain moonshiner, would those people be wiped out?
Well, only by nobody patronizing them. Mm-hmm. There was no legal places that would go and shut them down because they're illegal to begin with. Okay. See, so but there would be people say, "Oh, don't buy their moonshine, or don't get that because it's not good." Now my father-in-law, Hep Rubel, he had a pet moonshiner down around Loretta that he just felt like made the best that could be bought. And he always kept a keg of it in his attic of this outstanding good moonshine.
How would you drink moonshine? Would you combine it with anything else? Would you drink it straight?
Oh, no, you didn't drink it straight. You most of them drank, as I say, like my father, toddy.
And a toddy would be water, sugar?
Sugar, water, and whiskey.
Lemon?
Well, I don't think they fool with lemon. Then they would just stir it and drink it with a spoon.
Ice or hot, warm?
No, they usually put a piece of ice in it.
All they need was a little mint for mint julep.
Talking about priests, this is a good one, I think. I don't mind telling you. St. Rose was our congregation, our parish. And most all the priests liked just a little bit of drink. And my father was one of the leading parishioners. And he would kind of get it for him. And every so often, the pastor at St. Rose would make us a visit. And as a kid, I was wondering why he was coming to see us. So he was coming up, and my daddy would have two or three bottles to give him, or to let him have. I don't know where he gave it to him, or just one. But yeah, they used it. Well, they were just normal as anybody else.
Sure, and they needed some.
Sure, they needed.
And St. Rose is in Washington County, right outside of Springfield.
Right outside of Springfield.
And it's Father the Dominican orders.
Father Wilburn was the head of the congregation, and he would be a Sunday visitor about once a month.
Given us a wonderful background on this oral history during this prohibition era in Washington County, and thank you so much.
You're most welcome. I don't know whether it'll be a big help or not.